ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण।
I think they are the followers of Krishnananda Prabhu. Hare Krishna. I am very, very grateful to be back amongst all of you once again. Thank you very much for being here today, for Sri Radha Gopinath's Sunday festival. I'd like to speak a few words, but first I will make an announcement. As you know, I am not expert at making announcements, but I'll try. Recently, I was in Seattle, Washington, on the northwest coast of the United States. And I had a very special fortune of meeting with the first female disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Her name, do you know? Her name is Janaki, the sister of Yamuna. The first initiation ceremony of ISKCON took place on 22nd Avenue in the Lower East Side of New York City in the year of 1966. She was the only lady initiated in that ceremony. There were about six others as well. Janaki Devi Prabhu had a very special, loving relationship with Srila Prabhupada. He really treated her like his own personal daughter. And she really reciprocated as a father. So due to health reasons and other factors, she's been in quite an isolated place for several decades without much active association with devotees. But when she speaks, the memories of her love for Prabhupada just flow like the river Ganges. It's very special. I was giving lectures in Seattle, and she came down from Oregon. And when Malati Devi heard about it, she came also. So we were at one nice devotee's house. When she came to see me, or came to give me her association, she had a bag. And she apologized for this bag. She said, I have brought you a gift that I really hope you take, but I know it's kind of heavy, and I know it's somewhat large, and you travel so many places all over the world, and it may be a burden for you to carry this around, but I know you're very polite, and you won't want to say no. But at the same time, I don't want you to have to carry this around if it's too much burden for you. So if it's too much trouble for you to take this, you can give it back to me and I'll understand. But I really, really want you to keep it. But if it's too much trouble, don't feel bad. Don't feel any hesitation. Give it back to me and I'll keep it. But I really hope you keep it. And then there was a card that she gave me. I have it. And explained what the gift was. She wrote that just before the first initiation ceremony that Prabhupada ever did in the West in 1966, Second Avenue of New York, Srila Prabhupada personally gave her a gift. It was a gift of his own property that he would personally utilize. And she wanted to give it to me. But she wrote in the card, it's a little big, and it might be a burden, and I don't want to trouble you. So you can give it back if you like, but I really hope you keep it. Now, in all my life as a devotee, I on several occasions was fortunate to receive the Mahaprasad of Srila Prabhupada. But I never received non-perishable prasad from Prabhupada. Something other than food. And I was always thinking, if ever that day comes when someone gives me some of Prabhupada's Mahaprasad, we will enshrine it somewhere near Prabhupada's Vyasasan in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. So that all devotees in the congregation and from all over the world who come can actually see the tadit, the personal property of the spiritual master. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that things that are intimately used by the spiritual master are not different than the deity or the spiritual master. It's very sacred. I was hoping someday I may get a thread from one of Prabhupada's old gamshas that he wore, and that we could enshrine on his Vyasasa. So on this card, she wrote that Prabhupada personally used this and gave it as a gift to her before the first initiation ceremony of ISKCON. And she said that she personally witnessed him using it in New York City, 26 Second Avenue. And then she took it to San Francisco, the second temple. And when Prabhupada came there, he would regularly utilize this particular item. which he gave her, which she was hoping I would keep. But she understood it might be too much burden, so I could give it back. Would you like to know what it is? I have it here. Personally used by Srila Prabhupada in the Bowery and Second Avenue of New York and San Francisco to spread the glories of the holy names. May sound familiar to you if you've heard Prabhupada's tapes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada's cartels. And the brahmacharis will use their, as Braj Bihari Prabhu so nicely described it this morning, their independent intelligence. To find a way to make it a public object of worship for all of us in such a way that they will not be stolen. And Janaki's, Devi's dear friend Barb sewed this nice casing for the cartels. So in case Janaki Devi ever hears the tape of this lecture, let us all thank her from the core of our hearts by loudly chanting Hare Krishna. Much louder, please. During my time in America, on two occasions, I visited the forests of the largest trees in the world. And I'd like to speak on that subject today. The first time, it was with a bus tour of the youth of ISKCON. It's called Gurukuli Youth Bus Tour. And two full-size buses, mostly of young adults, teenagers who were born within our movement. Every year, a devotee named Manu, who was born in our movement, and his good wife, Jairadhe, they work really, really hard to organize and manage. They go all over America in two buses. They go to so many Rath Yatras, and then they go on excursions. So at Los Angeles Rath Yatra, I returned to the temple, New Dwarka, about 10 o'clock in the evening or night, and I got a message that Manu Prabhu really wanted me to join them the next day Now, I was supposed to go to San Diego, which is south, but they were going north about 5 hours to the Kings Canyon of the Sequoia National Park. So how could I say no to such a wonderful association? So Kings Canyon has the largest trees on earth. Would you like to hear something about these trees? The third largest tree on earth is the General Grant tree. Do you know who General Grant was? He was in the Civil War of America. America had the Civil War in the 19th century, where it was the northern states against the southern states. It was the bloodiest war America ever fought. More deaths, more injuries, more miseries than World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, or even the Iraq War. And it was Americans killing Americans over ideological economic differences. Hare Krishna. The allegiance to the flag of America is one nation under God, indivisible. That's the ideal. But it's amazing how ideological or economic differences could create such severe fractions in religious movements, in nations, in humanity. Essentially, it's all based on the false ego. Now, the amazing thing is the general for the other side, the Confederate Army, was Robert E. Lee. And in this forest, there's the Robert E. Lee tree. And a few minutes walk away was his arch enemy, the General Grant tree. Hare Krishna. So if you make enemies, you may have to stand next to them for the next 2,000 years. But this General Grant tree, very large, third largest tree in the world. I wish I could remember the exact statistics. Some I do, some I don't. This is one that I remember exactly, I think. If you hollow out this tree, it's approximately 52,510 cubic feet, the mass of this tree. Or 1,487 cubic meters. Hare Krishna. You could, if you hollow it out, you could put 170,000 basketballs inside of it. Do you know what basketball is? The ball is about this big. If you don't like basketball, but you like table tennis, ping pong, you can put over 20 million ping pong balls in it. Hare Krishna. If you don't like ping pong, but you like to just drive around in your car, you could fill it with petrol and put that on your tank, and you could go around the world 3.2 times without ever once having to stop to refill with petrol. Hare Krishna. It's a big tree. It has the largest base of any tree in the world. Now, an interesting thing about the General Grant tree is there's huge black gashes in it to standing through forest fire. But we'll get to that subject later. From there, we went to the largest tree in the world, the General Sherman tree. General Sherman tree is so big. It's written there, if an ant looks up at a 6-foot human being, he'll have the same experience as if a 6-foot human being looks up at the General Sherman tree. I'm only 5'6". So I was thinking, compared to this tree, I am less than an ant. Now, if you see this tree, how big, how wide, how high, you get a sense of what it must be like to be an ant. Now, most of us were ants at one time. Some of you ladies, you have nieces, so you are aunties. But I'm talking about the insect ant that you may have been in the past. You may have been an auntie as an ant also. But we look at ants crawling around. Yes? And we just look, take it for granted. But when they see us, it's like a whole forest of General Sherman trees walking all over the place. Very fearful life, is it not? Everything is so relative. And Srila Prabhupada explains how the demigods are so much greater than human beings in their power, in their intelligence, in their opulence, in the duration of their lives, in their ability to do things. The difference between a demigod and a human being is like the difference between a human being and an ant. Now, we see the difference between different creatures. The ants can never figure out what is a human being. We're just too much for them. So why is it unbelievable to think that there are demigods and we're like ants compared to them within God's creation? It's written in the scriptures. And we see the organization and the management of what they're doing. So I asked these young devotees born in our movement, most of them are teenagers, I asked if this General Sherman tree, which is said to be 2,200 years old, some people say 2,700 years old, so this tree has been standing there, the same spirit soul for 2,700 years. It's a long life. Hare Krishna. If that tree could give a message to humanity about what they've seen and over almost 3 millenniums, what would they want us to learn? What they think we should learn from what they've seen? So one young girl, she had a profound realization. She said, if I was that 2,700-year-old General Sherman tree, I would tell humanity that you should get serious and chant Hare Krishna. Otherwise, you may end up standing here for 3,000 years like me. Another had the realization, And I've been watching you people. I was there at the time of Buddha. I was there at the time of Jesus. I was there at the time of Muhammad. I was there at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I was there during the Greek Empire, and I saw the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. I saw the rise and fall of the British Empire. I saw all these world wars and all these crusades. So much fighting. Why you people are so egoistic? You just miss the point of life. You're always fighting over superficial, ridiculous things that you're going to lose in a couple years anyway. And you're completely forgetting what's eternal, what's of ultimate value in life. Isn't that true? So much conflict, so much fighting, so much arguing, so much causing suffering and misery to each other on the basis of temporary, superficial, egoistic differences. I want this, or I believe this. Compared to that tree, living 80 years is like the life of an ant. Hare Krishna. If we look down at seeing ants fighting over a little territory, or over, you know, who's better, who's more philosophical, we laugh. Stupid ants, they only live a couple days anyway. That is the problem with human society, especially in this age of Kali. So eager to fight, so eager to disagree, so eager to hate, so eager to envy. Over what? Nothing. Literally nothing. That which means nothing. I learned something very interesting about these trees. May I tell you? A couple weeks later, I was with a very dear God brother, Vaisheshika Prabhu, one of the icons of book distribution within the history of ISKCON. Wonderful devotee. Him and his good wife, they're divinely exemplary grihasthas. So we were doing programs together, and between programs we decided to take a walk, and he brought me to a redwood forest just north of San Francisco. It's called Muir National Park. We arrived in the parking lot, and just when we arrived, our dear godbrother Shamsundar Prabhu, he called from Chicago, and I told him we're at the Muir National Park, and he said, oh, that's a holy place. He said, in 1967 and 68 in San Francisco, we used to take Srila Prabhupada for morning walks in that same national park. You'll be going down the same paths and looking at the same trees. Gigantic, gigantic redwood trees. You can't believe how wide they are and how tall they are. We found out something very interesting about these redwood trees, which will be the subject of today's discussion. It was explained through some research that the forest rangers of that park were very attentive to put out all forest fires. for 50 years. And not a single new tree, redwood tree, grew in 50 years. The reason? Because the biggest, in this sense, greatest trees in the world, they need forest fires in every stage of their growth. Because you see, the seed is within a cone, which is very hard like wood. And the seed generally cannot get out unless it's under intensive heat. So the forest fire releases the seed. But even if the seed does get out, because in a forest, the ground is covered by so much foliage, weeds and creepers and grasses and everything that's falling from the trees, it can't take root. It just gets stuck. And the seed just dies. But the forest fire completely burns away everything on the ground so that the seed could perfectly take root in the soil. Another thing in these redwood forests, because of such heavy rain and humidity, there isn't so much nutrients in the soil there. But the forest fire, through the carbon and through the ashes, give immense nutrients to the soil, which is necessary for those redwood trees to grow. And another thing, when that little tree is growing, will sprout, it needs abundant sunshine. And when there's so many trees in the forest, the sun can't reach that little sprout. But the forest fire clears away all the trees except the big, strong redwood trees so that the sun could come and shine on that little sprout and make it grow. So the forest fire is very important for that seed to grow. And once it grows strong, then no forest fire can harm it. Its bark is 1 foot thick all around it. It's what, about 30 centimeters?
Hare Krishna.
I'd like to try to illustrate how we could learn such valuable gifts from nature. It is said by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, samsara dava nalalita loka, that this material world is compared to a raging forest fire. Now we may ask, why does Krishna make the material world like a raging forest fire? Why doesn't he make it like a cooling, pleasant ocean breeze? Because we'd never get out. The fires of material existence, in one sense, we create them due to our own activities. But Krishna facilitates. Why? So that there's an impetus to return to our original home, the spiritual world, where the real love between the soul and God is unlimited and eternal. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasari Bhai Bhakti Latha Bija. that after wandering through many, many universes, through many, many species of life, perhaps 8,400,000 species of life, perhaps many times over, each time suffering birth, old age, disease, and death, each time suffering the threefold miseries, adi-atmaka, adi-daivaka, adi-bhautaka, miseries caused by one's own body and mind, miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by natural disturbances beyond our control. Yes, there is pleasure and there is enjoyment, but along with all the pleasures and enjoyments that we're seeking and trying to experience, dukkalayam ashashvatam, the threefold miseries, are a permanent reality. We cannot escape. And birth, old age, disease, and death is imminent. As we're enjoying, we're simultaneously dying by the power of time. So after going through all these species of life again and again and again, traveling here and there, one planet, one universe, in all different circumstances, when one finally, in the rare opportunity of a human life, comes in contact with the spiritual master, then the seed of bhakti is revealed within the heart. Where is that seed of bhakti coming from? Srila Prabhupada explains, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabu Noi Sravanadi Sudhi Cheti Koriya Yudhoi. That love of God is the nature of every living entity. Love of God is dormant within the heart of everyone. It has simply been forgotten. Why? Because that seed has been covered by the cone of our hard-hearted, egoistic pursuit to enjoy. Yes? Therefore, it's as if that seed isn't even there. So dormant. Because it's encased within the cone of our own material conditionings. But due to the burning forest fire of material existence, we approach the spiritual master. And the spiritual master and Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard, Krishna from within and the Guru from without. Krishna is within the heart and he is directing us if we are sincere. If we sincerely want to make a solution to the suffering, burning fire of this world, he directs us to the spiritual master. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you go to a spiritual master for the purpose of making your material life better, you're missing the point of the whole purpose of life. One who really can get the knowledge, who can actually receive the mercy of Guru, has to be frustrated with the vain attempts to enjoy material life. Have to want to find something higher, something more meaningful, something real. So factually, it is contact with Guru and Krishna under the circumstance of the obstacles, the difficulties, and the tribulations of material life that actually cause that seed of devotion to awaken within our heart and come out from the cone of our egoistic forgetfulness. The cone is like forgetfulness. Now, for that seed to take root, like the sequoia seed. If there's all kinds of shrubs and everything on the ground, it can't take root. But the fire of material existence, the obstacles, the difficulties, even sometimes the pains of material existence, have the power to make us humble. Because just seeing a guru, or just hearing from a guru, it's good. But the real bhakti lata bij takes root when tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. When we inquire submissively and we have the eagerness to render humble, menial service. So yes, for the knowledge and the grace of Guru and Krishna to take root within our heart, we have to be submissive, we have to be humble, and we have to have a menial desire to serve. And the fires of the material existence burn away all the shrubs in the ground of our egos. Let's use an example. The classic example is Narada Muni in his previous life. He was a maidservant's son. Being the son of a maidservant is a very humbling situation. There's many difficulties. No respect from anyone. No honor from anyone. Often treated like a slave by people. Very difficult. But because he was such in a humble position, he was content and enthusiastic to perform the most menial service for his gurus, the Bhaktivedantas. He was washing for them. He was serving them. He was doing very, very simple services. He was cleaning things for them. And when they offered him some of their maha maha prasad, because he was in such a humble menial position, he was so grateful to take it. Later on, when he became Narada Muni, he explained, I took their prasad just one time. I got the remnants of their prasad with their permission. And how it transformed his life. Now, we may be taking maha maha prasad from so many Bhaktivedantas. Yes? Why our life isn't changing? Because of that little boy's attitude. Because he was really humble. He really didn't think he deserved anything. Therefore, when he got their remnants, he valued it so greatly. Krishna says in Gita, as you approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. As we chant his holy names, as we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, as we honor the prasad of the devotees, as we come before the deity of the Lord, according to our consciousness, Krishna is reciprocating. If we understand the value and we feel deeply grateful, we get maximum effect of God's mercy. So yes, that little boy, the samsara davanala vidoka, the difficulty, the obstacles of this world put him in a very difficult situation of being a maidservant's son. But because it made him humble, that humility, his situation, his difficulties, burned away all the shrubs on the ground. It's a clean ground. When he got the prasad, he was grateful. When he served those persons, he served with all his heart, gratefully. gratitude is essential. The soil of the heart, if it is not fertilized by gratitude and humility, the seed of bhakti cannot really take its root and grow properly. And when that ground is covered by all kinds of weeds and shrubs and everything else, in the form of pride, in the form of ingratitude, taking things for granted, taking great things cheaply and cheap things greatly, that is conditioning. It's a great impediment. But he was humble. He was grateful to serve. He was grateful to take remnants. He was grateful to hear from them. The next thing is, we were discussing how the forest fire gives nutrients to the soil to help that sprout to grow. Similarly, the impediments that come in our spiritual life, which we may not like, they nourish our devotion with wisdom. People who go through all kinds of circumstances, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, we usually learn more from the difficulties than from the pleasures. Do we not? I'll give a crude example. I'll give two crude examples to keep things balanced. A brahmachari and a grihastha. Now, the reason we have counselors for married couples, one reason, there's many reasons, but this is an important reason, is that every married couple, as far as I understand, basically make the same foolish mistakes. Different varieties. But the same genre, is that what it's called? Same genre, the same basic categories. Those in the West, they make the mistakes and it creates heavy forest fires right in the house. It's not a forest fire, it's a domestic fire. And they end up fighting and separating and divorcing. Amazing. 69% of marriages in 1989 in America were divorced within 3 years. There's a lot of blazing fires going on. And now it's worse. And it's so bad that many people just don't even bother to get married because they know, why go through all this legal stuff? We know there's a 70% chance minimum that we're going to separate, so let's just live together and forget all these formalities. Hare Krishna. Why? Srila Prabhupada said, when you're married, there is no question of divorce. It's just an impossibility. It's not something to be considered. It's a vow, commitment for life. It's not easy. Now, those who have gone through all the tribulations, who's gone through all the ego conflicts, I was never married. I'm theoretical. But, you know, I hear a lot of things. Husbands and wives, how many of you have had egoistic battles in your lives? No, you don't have to answer. You don't have to answer the question. Please don't answer the question. But you know you have. Because everyone tells me about it, so no problem. So many egoistic battles. So many mistakes you make, so many offenses you make to each other, so many misunderstandings. But what is a counselor? Or parents, if it's a joint family in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. They've been through it all. And they've learned lessons through their troubles, through their battles, through their disagreements, through impossible situations. They've developed wisdom. Wisdom of how to unite on a higher platform. I know in my own parents, at one time they were not agreeing and they were thinking maybe we should separate, but then because they felt for the sake of the children we should stay together. And through just doing it, no matter what, they developed such a deep relationship. Not a romantic relationship, a relationship of real love and trust. And so much wisdom. When my mother passed away, they were married 58 years, totally faithful to each other. So yes, the tribulations, the obstacles, the difficulties, like the forest fires, they give nutrients to the soil of our heart through wisdom. The wisdom of how to transcend problems. And brahmachari, same thing. Every brahmachari, more or less, has the same mental problems and sensual problems and egoistic problems. Everyone thinks it's unique. Why me? Because you're a human being in Kali Yuga. That's why you. Nothing personal. But when there's senior brahmacharis, sannyasis, who've gone through the same things, who've seen the same things, they have wisdom. This is how you overcome it. Yes? So it is a fact. The impediments, the obstacles, the difficulties that come bring us wisdom when we make the right choices to overcome them. Now the next virtue of a forest fire is it just burns down all the unimportant trees so that the sunshine can make the redwood trees grow. Otherwise, those unimportant trees block the sun. The analogy in this sense is those other trees are our anartas. When impediments and difficulties come in our lives, it exposes our anartas. Yes? And when our anartas are exposed, when there's difficulties that are beyond our control, we have to take shelter of the Lord. Through the impediments and the sufferings of material existence, we are impelled to take shelter because it's beyond us. And what happens when we take shelter? To the degree we do, we are exposed to the sun of Krishna's mercy. Like Draupadi. When she was being stripped naked by Dushasana in the court of the Kurus, she had so many of her own ideas of how to save herself. She turned to Dhritarashtra, to Bhishma, to her own husbands. They were like those little trees. Couldn't help her. She tried to use her own argumentative. She was yelling all kinds of bad things to Dushasana and cursing him. Didn't work. She tried to use her own physical strength. She was helpless. There's a serious fire going on. And ultimately, that fire burned away her dependence on all the false soldiers. Prabhupada says the fallible soldiers of material existence that we're taking shelter of. Our own intelligence, our own abilities, or the intelligence and abilities of the conditioned souls around us. It was all burned away by the fire of that torment. And then she raised her arms and took shelter wholeheartedly, exclusively. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. And because all of her misconceptions were burned away when she took shelter of Krishna, knowing only you can save me, the sun of Krishna's mercy shone brightly. In the case of Narada Muni, after he received the mercy of the Bhaktivedantas, there was a longing in his heart for Krishna consciousness. Well, what happened? Another impediment. He was only a child. And his mother died. He had no father. His widowed mother died. There was no other relatives around. In fact, there was no one else around. It was just him and his mother living in the forest together. Now that's a serious crisis for a little child, to be all alone and your mother dies by being bitten by a snake while she went out to milk a cow. And the Bhaktivedantas had already left. Torment. But what did that impediment do for him? It was like the fire burning away all the other trees. There was no one else to depend on except Krishna. There was nothing else to do except go for Krishna. No one else could help him except Krishna. And he searched. Search for Krishna everywhere. Through the cities, the towns, the villages, the farms, the forests, and deep, deep into the forest. He was just traveling like a wandering mendicant, searching for that essence of what the Bhaktivedantas told him about, Krishna in the heart. And ultimately, he took a little water and meditated. And in his meditation, he was longing so deeply that he visualized Krishna appeared within his heart. But then Krishna disappeared. Another torment, another impediment. He saw the most glorious jewel of all jewels. He attained the greatest treasure of all treasures. And suddenly, it vanished. And he was left with nothing. But that impediment, the fire of that torment, of separation, burned in his heart, blazed in his heart, and burned away all impurities. He longed and longed and longed for Krishna. He did every kind of meditation, the same thing, but nothing happened. Finally, Krishna spoke to him. He said, "You are not ready to see me on a permanent basis. But because this fire of separation is now kindled in your heart, you just keep cultivating that fire of separation and it will burn away all impurities, all impediments, all the useless trees of our egoistic pursuits in life, all of our useless misconceptions based on the false ego. That torment of separation will burn it all away." And your love for me will go greater and greater and deeper and higher and higher. Like the redwood trees. The amazing thing, he became Narada Muni, a Mahabhagavat, great soul. But he went through impediments. He took shelter of Krishna in the presence of the fire of material existence to attain that. And it's very rare that anyone can achieve Krishna without going through that. When you look at the general grand tree, or general, especially, there are deep black gashes I was telling you about. Amazing. That tree has been standing there for over 2,000 years. Do you know how many forest fires there's been? Sometimes forest fires, especially before there were fire brigades, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, forest fires could blaze for months at a time, just blazing, blazing, blazing. And the tree is just standing, tolerating, but growing, getting more nutrients, getting more sunlight, but burning. I was thinking of Lord Chaitanya's glorious teaching. Trinarapi sunichena taror ibasihishvana. Hamani namana dena kirtaniya sadahar. We should be humble like the grass. People step on us, people throw things on us, people do everything on us. And we just keep getting back up and eager to serve. That is the grass. And even if we're down, we're ready to serve there. But next, more tolerant than a tree. Now, we have spoken many times about this being more tolerant than a tree. But until I saw this General Grant tree in the Sequoia National Forest, Kings Canyon, and I saw how big that tree is and the deep black gashes of probably hundreds of forest fires it stood through without moving, standing straight through the forest fire, not moving from its position, roots in the ground. It gave me a whole new dimension of what it means to be tolerant like a tree. Even through these blazing fires, even through impediments, difficulties, being misunderstood, adiatmakari, daivakari, bhotika, whatever comes in our life, whatever temptations are there in our life, how does a tree remain tolerant? It remains completely fixed in its position. Doesn't go away. Yes? Keeps its roots. We've made vows, many of us, to chant at least 16 rounds every day, to follow these four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, to remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada in the spirit of the servant of the servant of the servant. Now, whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, impediments will come. Difficulties will come. They have to. It's the world. If you think devotees are having difficulties, look at people who aren't devotees. They're having more difficulties, even more difficulties. But they don't have the roots anywhere. They're not making progress. They're not taking shelter. So to be tolerant like a tree means we remain fixed in our ideals. We remain fixed in our vows. We remain fixed in our service to the Lord, service to Guru, service to Vaishnavas, no matter what. Tamstatikshasva Bharata. Matra sparashasta konteya sitos nasukadukada agama payanonityas tamstatikshasva Bharata. In the second chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells the non permanent appearance and disappearance of happiness and distress and all other dualities, they come in our life like the winter and summer seasons. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. what does it mean to not be disturbed? It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. And it doesn't mean it doesn't feel good. It means we remain fixed in the principles of bhakti. The General Grant tree feels the fire, but doesn't move from its position. And that's how it grows to be the third largest tree in the world. So Mahatma is a great soul. A great soul is like a great tree. Tamsa Diksha Svabharata. Whatever comes, we remain fixed in our purpose. Vyavashayatmaka buddhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hyanantascha buddhayo vyavashayanam. Krishna stresses this point. It's not a minor detail. It's the basis. It's the essence. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. Their aim is one. They're not many branched. The pleasures that come upon us, we tolerate them and remain fixed in our devotional service. The temptations that come upon us, they may disturb us. That's all right. But it should not disturb our service. We should remain fixed like that tree. And the fears, the dangers, the thoughts of what we have to lose, even sometimes the sufferings, we remain fixed. Yes. Raghupati Prabhu, he had major heart attacks. But I was told that as soon as he came out of it, he wasn't thinking, you know, there must be something better to do in life. No. Fixed. Came out of his heart attacks, made him a stronger devotee. I deserve worse. Krishna's blessed me. Such wonderful association, such wonderful prayers. Nitya Krishna Prabhu, he's a stronger devotee. Grateful for all the prayers of the Vaishnavas. It's wonderful. Sometimes these difficulties, they help us to remain fixed. And that's why in initiation we take vows. The vows is to help us to remain fixed. To help us to understand the importance of being like that tree. Not moving, not budging, not letting our roots go out from taking shelter of Krishna and his holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare.
Now some teachers today of various spiritual movements, they only talk about being happy in this world and nice pleasure, feeling good and all that. That's nice. You could feel good.
But you don't become like a redwood tree. You become like the little trees. That's all you're getting is those little trees. And it's going to be burned away. But if we want to be Mahatma, great soul, redwood, Sequoia Vaishnav. you have to understand this principle. Tate nukampam susumikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipagam. Ridvagva burbir vidatam namaste jiveti yamuktipate sadayavak. Now, sometimes we understand, yes, difficulties, obstacles, sufferings, they'll come. But Krishna, I want to select the type. I'll write down in my prayers what type of sufferings you should give me and what type not to give me. Well,
when you write it down, expect whatever you said not to do, Krishna will give you. Because that's what you need. Otherwise, it's all superficial. Another example of the same principle of how Narada Muni became Mahabhagavat. Through the same principle we're learning today of the evolution of the seed of the redwood tree. Dhruva Maharaj. He was a little boy of five. His mother broke his heart with her harsh words. His ego was crushed. It was literally, from a physiological point of view, it must have been like flaming, burning arrows just penetrating and gouging deep into his heart. He left home. He ran away. He wanted revenge. He was so angry. His mother said, "Well, I think God's the only one who could help you." "Well, where is God?" Great souls go to the forest. She wasn't expecting him to go, but he went. He was so he was burnt. There was a fire blazing inside and outside of him. But it was that fire that brought him to Narada Muni. And then Narada Muni taught him tapasya, which is another type of fire. So many impediments. Fasting, standing on one toe, not breathing. But what happened through it all? All the shrubs were burned away. The seed just came out in the presence of Narada, took roots in the ground. All the other trees were of his anartas and his misconceptions and his false shelters were burned away. The sun of Krishna's mercy came upon him. He became completely purified and saw Lord Vishnu in a matter of several months. And when Vishnu told him, "I will give you whatever you like. You want a kingdom greater than your grandfather? I will give." Dhruva said, "I don't want." Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. Dhruva Maharaj responds to the Lord, "I was looking for broken pieces of glass in the form of worldly power, prestige, wealth, and enjoyment. But I have received the rare jewel of your darshan. All I want is to be the servant of the servant of your servants." Or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, "Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja kadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rohaita kitvai." I don't want wealth or opposite sex pleasures or followers, prestige, even liberation. I only want to be your servant unconditionally. That is pure heart. That is the fruit of love of God that awakens from the tree. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasari by Bhakti Lata Bija. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains like this. Through the fire of material existence, we approach the spiritual master, we become submissive, we become humble, we're eager to serve, we inquire submissively, "I don't know, you know." Look at Arjuna. As long as things were all right, he was not receptive to Krishna's knowledge. Such a fire was burning in him. He was pale. He was parched inside. He dropped his bow. His hands were shaking. Karapanya doso bahatasvabhava. "Krishna, I don't know what to do. I'm burning. Please instruct me." When he was in that situation, then Krishna understood, "My words will take root in his heart." Tadvidi pranipati. So the process of Krishna consciousness is so beautiful. And even though we're talking about all this taror ivasi hishnuna, tolerating like a tree, it's actually a blissful process. It's happier than any other thing you can do in this world. Because through whatever may happen in this world, through the impediments, if we maintain our integrity by keeping our position and our faithfulness to Krishna, inner fulfillment and inner reciprocation with Krishna enlivens, inspires, and gives ecstasy to the heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajja Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudhi Chiti Koriya Yudoi. That seed of love of God is within the heart. And bhakti is the process where Krishna through circumstances within and out, and Krishna through the spiritual master and the scriptures and the sadhus nourishing you. It's all working together. If we just remain faithful, just remain sincere, humble and tolerant, offering respect to others and none in return, and keep watering it with hearing the glories of the Lord, associating with the devotees of the Lord, and chanting the holy names of the Lord. If we just keep that water coming, despite whatever happens, that tree grows and grows higher than the highest of redwood trees, pierces through the covering of material existence, enters into the Brahma Jyoti, goes to Vaikuntha, all the way up to Vakoloka Vrindavan. That's a big tree. And then the fruit of love of God ripens and falls at the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath. And they taste it. And when they're satisfied, we are actually watering the root of the tree of the whole existence. Then the gardener, the tree, experiences the ultimate satisfaction. If we have nice association with devotees with proper quality, then all the ups and downs and all arounds that will happen in our spiritual sojourn will not only be tolerable, but will be meaningful and ultimately blissful. Association with devotees is so important. We're here for each other. Our dear devotee Gopinath Prabhu, I think you all know the story. Shamsundar Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's dear personal secretary, who brought George Harrison to Srila Prabhupada. Through Shamsundar Prabhu, millions of people, directly or indirectly, were touched by Krishna consciousness. It was he that got Prabhupada the visa for Russia and went with him. That seed of that little service that he did, Russia, there's more devotees in Russia, initiated devotees, than anywhere else in the world. I think more than even India. Hare Krishna. And it was behind the Iron Curtain. Nobody else could get Prabhupada that visa. He got him in. And Prabhupada was lecturing. But when Shamsundar Prabhu was out just trying to find some vegetables for Prabhupada, he met a Russian boy and the son of an Indian diplomat. He brought them back to Prabhupada. Prabhupada spent 3 days preaching to that Russian boy, taught him the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada and Shamsundar had to leave, but that boy spread Krishna consciousness. And then who he preached to, they preached to others, and who they preached to, they preached to others. And soon it was a fire of bhakti underground. Thousands, tens and thousands of people reading Prabhupada's books, Xeroxing them, and every book was read by 100 people because it was all illegal. And then when it became legal after communism fell, an explosion. Shamsundar Prabhu got Prabhupada to Russia and brought that person to him. In the Western world, factually, a large percentage of the people who are favorable toward our movement or even became devotees, their initial contact was the songs of George Harrison. Shamsundar Prabhu brought George Harrison to Prabhupada, lived with him, cultivated him, got him to understand Prabhupada's teachings in a practical way, to put in his store songs. And what can I say? He was one of the main persons to organize the Cross Maidan Pandal program, where the seed of bhakti was planted in my heart, here in Bombay. So directly or indirectly, what has he done for Prabhupada and for the world and for Lord Chaitanya's mission? Very instrumental. So he's going to die. There's no hope. His liver is disintegrated. First person to volunteer, Gopinath Prabhu. I'd like to tell you a little story. You may have heard it, but I'll tell you anyway. University of Chicago. As far as what Shamsundar Prabhu told me, that's the place they invented the living donor of a liver. Previously, a liver transplant came from a dead corpse. If somebody dies somewhere in the country who has a compatible liver to you, then they have to cut that person open, take off his liver, put it in ice or whatever packing they do, and Federal Express it on a certain, it's not Federal Express, but on a certain jet plane to get to you and cut you open and get it in right in time. But there's a problem. Whether the liver is compatible, there's not all that many people dying whose livers are in good shape who are willing to donate it. And there's a list of thousands of people who need it. So he would have died. He didn't have time. The only possibility is a living donor. Now, the University of Chicago Hospital have done so many of these surgeries. As far as I was told, they've never got a donor that wasn't a relative of the person dying. It's a serious surgery. It's about a 10-hour surgery. It takes about 9 weeks to recover. Sanjeev Agarwal, who is a doctor in London, was telling the donor has to give 2/3 of his or her liver to the person getting it. Now, the liver is a big organ, and it's a very vital organ. I'm not a medical man, but ask one of our Bhaktivedanta doctors. Very, very crucial. Who is willing to do that? Suffer so much pain, risk their lives, unless it's for their father or their mother or their brother. Well, Shamsundar Prabhu, his two daughters both volunteered, but their livers were not compatible. So I happened to be in Seattle a few minutes after I got these cartels. Actually, about 2 hours after I got these cartels. I'm sitting with Janaki and Malati and a few other devotees, Prabhus, and Shamsundar Prabhu calls. He says, "It's finished. My daughters, they're not compatible." So we were talking, let's see if any devotee wants to offer. So Malati Devi, she put on the internet Dandavats and Pamho, whatever those things are. Amazing. The hospital got 35 phone calls of people with the same blood type who wanted to donate their liver for Shamsundar Prabhu. From Italy. a 19-year-old Gurukuli boy volunteered his liver. His name is Madhavananda Prabhu. His mother is Chitra Rupini, one of my god sisters. And another man in Venice, Maturapati, he's also a devotee. He offered his, but he's 50 years old. And from London, Radhika Jivan, a brahmachari at Bhaktivedanta Manor, called, volunteered it. Another devotee from Norway called, volunteered. People from India, people from Africa, people from Greece, people from different parts of America. There were calls from Australia saying, I'd like to give my liver to Shamsundar. The hospital people. Now they know what charity is about. They couldn't believe it. They called Shamsundar Prabhu and said, who are you? Nobody will go through this sacrifice for someone who's not an immediate relative. Even big politicians, people vote for them, but they won't give their liver to them. Even big rock and roll stars, they'll dance for them and give their money for them, but they won't give their livers to them. Hare Krishna. Even big movie actors, they'll see them and praise them and read about them and look at them, but they won't give a liver. They have to wait till somebody dies to get one. But we're getting calls from all over the world for you. Who are you? Hare Krishna. Gopinath Prabhu was the first to volunteer. He called me to ask my opinion. I said, I cannot tell you to do this. It's too much risk and too much pain. I cannot tell you to do it. I'll fully understand and sympathize with you if you change your mind. But I can say this. If you go through with it, I will be eternally indebted to you. Hundreds of devotees all over the world will be eternally indebted to you, and Prabhupada will shower his blessings on you. He said, I'm convinced, but I cannot do it without the heartfelt blessings of my wife. He asked Parijata Devi. They have a 2-year-old son, Rasanath Prabhu. Wild as anything, noisy as anything. And Parijata is such a gentle lady dealing with this wild little boy. He asked her with tears in her eyes. She said, you know, my dear husband, this is the greatest service you can do for Prabhupada, for our whole society, for someone who's so, you're so fortunate to do it. She gave her full blessings. Now, honestly, the sacrifice of her giving her heartfelt blessings was as great as the sacrifice of him going through the whole ordeal. Because she has to go through it with him. And if something happens, she's alone. These are serious devotees. Great souls. Sham Charan Prabhu just sent out an email forwarded from Parijata Devi that it was a 10-hour surgery and both Shamsundar Prabhu and Gopinath Prabhu came through it safely. They were both in the ICU, the intensive care unit. There were no problems in the surgery. As of now, everything is looking very, very good. It's a very serious, painful recovery time. But she's voicing her words and Gopinath Prabhu's words. how fortunate and grateful they are that they have received such support, such love, and such affection from so many devotees. Whatever pain, whatever risk of death, he told me it's a small price for all the blessings I'm getting.
Hare Krishna.
And he was telling me about, he called so many devotees for blessings. Satchinandan Maharaj, Jayadvaita Maharaj, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, Niranjan Maharaj, and others get their blessings before doing this. And he called some of the doctors at Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And one doctor, I'm not going to mention his name. If you want to know, you can ask me privately. A surgeon. He told me, Gopinath Prabhu told me, he asked for his blessings, and this doctor said, the surgery is dangerous, but the greatest danger that you will be facing is you're going to get so much respect and so much honor for doing this that you may become proud. That's the greatest danger of this surgery, that you may become puffed up, that I have done so much and I'm getting so much respect. Hare Krishna. Only a devotee doctor could have that realization. But the University of Chicago Hospital, they're dumbfounded. What kind of society is this Hare Krishna movement? Well, people are standing in line to go through this painful, dangerous ordeal. And another amazing thing, Gopinath Prabhu never met Shyamasundara Prabhu in his whole life. And he's willing to do all this because of his love for Srila Prabhupada. The substance of Krishna consciousness is something very deep and very great. And the willingness to do some austerities, the willingness to remain fixed in our purpose despite impediments, difficulties, crises, is what make us strong and make us great and help us to fully take shelter of Krishna with a grateful heart and chant his names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Sometimes I quote one American author who was speaking at a time of war, when the American army was losing the war bitterly. If people are inspired, if people have faith, it's unbelievable what they can overcome. And one of the things that turned that war around were these words. May I read them to you? Now understand, Bhagavad Gita is about how to fight a war, an internal war. The war of good and evil within ourselves. The war between the divine and the demoniac. Or as His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj would say, the war between the good dog and the bad dog. the bad dog of envy and lust and pride and greed and anger and illusion. We've been feeding that bad dog so much by giving it our attention, by giving it our time, by serving its dictations, that it is strong and it is howling. And the good dog, you know, we just come to Krishna consciousness. All of a sudden we learn no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. You're supposed to be humble like a blade of grass and tolerance like a tree. You're supposed to offer all respect to others. And you're supposed to chant Hare Krishna all the time. You're supposed to be the servant of the servant of the servant. That good dog is just starting to get a little food. It's like, roof, roof, roof. Ruff, 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 ruff. And the bad dog goes, ruff, 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 ruff. It's a battle. Now, the one you nourish the most is the one that's going to become stronger and win. And how do we nourish it? We nourish the good dog or the bad dog by following its dictations. Whenever we give in to the dictations of lust or anger or envy or pride or greed, the bad dog gets stronger, more powerful, more hungry. Every time you say no to it, now you know what happens when you say no. It's already powerful. It's already conditioned to controlling you. Can't tolerate that you're betraying. Bad dog is saying, your demonic nature, you married me long ago. You have to be faithful to me. You cannot betray me. No, I will not tolerate it. You say, when he wants something, he goes, woof! When you say no, he goes, wah! And when you say no again, very hungry, ravaging. And meanwhile, the word of Guru and the word of the Vaishnavas and the word of Gita is going, Sarvadharman Purachya. But if we just feed that little Sarvadharman Purachya, then soon it's going, Sarva Dharman Parityaja. And if you keep starving the bad dog, it's going, bruh, 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 bruh. Starving, dying. So it's a battle. Bhagavad Gita is about the battle between good and evil within ourselves. So here is something that inspired men who were losing a battle because they were outnumbered. But we need inspiration, we need courage to fight. To fight our lower self by feeding our higher self. Do I have your permission to read? These are the times that try men's souls. The sunshine, the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their country. Summer soldier, sunshine patriot, means we're very enthusiastic and very loyal when it's a nice day, when everything's going all right. But when there's a storm, when there's opposition, when there's problem, we shrink from the service. In our case, our service to God. But he that stands it now,
like the redwood tree,
deserves the love and thanks of all men and women. It's like we are thanking Gopinath. We are thanking Raghupati, Nitya Krishna Prabhu, and all the devotees who prayed for them because they stood through crisis. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. In our case, tyranny means being subjected to Maya. Being subjected to the propaganda and the control of Maya. It's like hell, not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is in dearness only that gives everything its value. Any project we have in Krishna consciousness, any internal development we make in our Krishna consciousness, human nature is, if it comes cheaply, we esteem it lightly. The harder the struggle, the greater the difficulty, the more glorious the triumph, and the more meaningful is the experience to us. When you have to make sacrifice for something, it becomes very dear to you. Just like a child and a mother. Perhaps that's why Krishna gave labor pains. Why does he make labor pains before a birth? Of course, this morning we read about Diti. She didn't have any labor pains. Because she's Devaki and Yashoda, they didn't need labor pains. They had pure love for Krishna without. But for us, the pain of giving birth, on some kind of a subconscious psychological level, if a person's a decent human being, that mother is going to really feel that child to be very dear to it because it sacrificed so much for that child. And all the sacrifices after birth. It makes the child, when the child's growing up and the child's nice or nicely naughty and healthy, how much we give of selfless love and service helps us appreciate the dearness of that object. Yes? And let us take Srila Prabhupada. We use the example often. If he just took a plane to New York and had 100 people waiting for him at the airport and a nice temple already made, he would not be as dear to our heart as he was and as he is, because of the struggles he endured to give us Krishna consciousness. So it is true. It is in dearness only that everything, that gives everything its value. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. And if things come too cheaply, we esteem it lowly. It's not very dear to us. So the challenges, the crises that we endure in the battle against Maya, within and without, and turning to Krishna in that situation, is what gives deep fulfillment, deep meaning, and deep ecstasy to our lives. And ultimately the gratitude, the humility, and the faith that grows out of that attracts Krishna, the all-attractive, all-beautiful, reservoir of all pleasure. And Krishna's here with us always. According to the quality of our heart, Krishna manifests all of his opulences as we chant his holy names. Due to all of your many years of faithful devotional service, Srila Prabhupada has reciprocated by sending himself in the form of his karatals to live amongst us. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Ananti koti vaishna vrinda ki go premanandi shishiradha gopinath ki jai.